And this is KPCW. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's Thursday, November 13th. Currently 42 degrees in Park City as well as in Heber City. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, Cedric Haynes.
Happy Thursday, KPCW listeners. It's time for a look at your forecast for the Wasatch Back. We're looking at lots of sunshine expected for us to return today. A couple of high clouds from time to time, but more sun than clouds for us as we go throughout this afternoon. High temperatures will climb into the lower 60s in the Park City area. We'll see those high temperatures climbing into the mid-60s in the Heber Valley. As we move into your Friday, look for increasing clouds once again. We'll have a weak front trying to approach the area, but it's going to be splitting, and so that means part of the energy goes to our north, part of the energy goes down to our south, and that's just going to leave us in between. So we'll have a chance of a couple of isolated showers for your Friday, but for most of us, it will likely be on the dry side now. As we go into your Saturday, look for more dry weather. We'll have a mixture of clouds and sunshine. Temperatures starting off Saturday morning in the 30s. We'll climb into the upper 50s for highs in Park City Saturday afternoon with high temperatures in the mid-60s for us in the Heber Valley. Once we get towards your Sunday, that's when we expect a storm system to start moving in from the south. That should bring in much more moisture across the state, starting across the south Saturday night and moving across northern Utah, including the Wasatch Back, as they go throughout your Sunday. Look for off and on rain showers to be likely for your Sunday, with temperatures for highs only around 50 in Park City, with highs only in the mid-50s in the Heber Valley. So Saturday will be the drier of the 2 days of the weekend, with Sunday being the wetter day. We'll continue to keep that active pattern sticking around Sunday night into Monday. Look for more rain chances to continue out there. Temperatures will be only in the upper 40s for highs in the Heber Valley on Monday. We'll have highs only in the low 40s in Park City, and could even have some snowflakes mixing in with the rain as we go throughout your Monday in Park City. By the time we get towards your Monday night into Tuesday, another storm system quickly moves in on the heels of the first storm system, and that one will have some colder air to work with. So we're looking at a rain-snow mix as we go into your Tuesday for the Heber Valley, and a chance of some accumulating snow making its way into Park City again as we get towards your Tuesday there, with highs only in the upper 30s. That's a look at your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour, I'll be checking in with Summit County Councilmember Roger Armstrong, recapping yesterday's meeting. Later on, Tessa and Jason Stinsman discuss Revolution Ski and Blade. They're a local ski and roller babe team. And the executive director of PC Talk, Sue Banerjee, with details on some new openings and how the city and county public funding can help local families. Then stay tuned for Cool Science Radio. Today's guests include science journalist Asher Elbein, who explores a radical new theory that life's complexity may have emerged more than once on Earth. New evidence from billion-year-old equatorial African fossils could rewrite evolutionary history. Then Park City's Don Stanger breaks down the world of microchips and AI, how they're made, why they matter, and what they mean for our technological future. All of that coming up on Cool Science Radio, of course, heard every Thursday right after the local news hour from 9 to 10. Taking a look now at some local news, residents can weigh in on a developer's application to turn part of Kimball Junction into a town at a public hearing tonight. As KPCW's Connor Thomas reports, they have no say whether or not that town actually happens.
Dakota Pacific Real Estate filed an application to create a preliminary municipality in Summit County this year. It's one of the various ways the developer has tried to get its controversial Kimball Junction project across the finish line. Dakota Pacific representatives have framed the plan to make their 50 acres around the former Skullcandy building into a town as a plan B. It's there if the 2025 state law that rezoned the land in their favor fails. The group inked a new development agreement with Summit County and High Valley Transit this year, but hasn't withdrawn the town application, so the Utah Lieutenant Governor's Office is required by law to hold a public hearing about incorporation. It's from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday at Ecker Hill Middle School. State officials will give residents an overview of the process to incorporate the town. Consultants are expected to present a study that says it's financially feasible to do so. Dakota Pacific's proposal is a 725-unit neighborhood and public-private partnership with Summit County to put a mixed-use development along 224. About half the housing would be for area workforce. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, the Kimball Junction Library is hosting its final used book sale this weekend before pausing donations ahead of a move to the Skullcandy building next spring. The Summit County Friends of the Library's used biannual used book sale will be its last at the Kimball Junction branch. Friends President Sue Niblock says the 3-day sale begins this evening with a special preview for members.
Thursday is from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday and Saturday are from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Thursday is the member sneak preview. Anyone can come. We will have a desk out front. You can join Friends of the Library for just $10 a year, and then you can come right in.
Shoppers will find books in every genre, from popular fiction and nonfiction to young adult titles. For those who like surprises, Niblock says the group's bringing back the mystery books feature.
We have boxes, and they will be labeled whether they're mystery or romance or young adult, and they'll be all wrapped up, and you won't know what's in them, and you can buy them for bargain prices, which is always kind of fun.
Prices start at $1 for two children's books. Adult paperbacks are also $1, with hardcovers selling for $2. The Friends also sell large bags for $15 that can be filled with as many books that fit. Well, donations are collected at all three library branches. Most come through the Kimball Junction branch. Niblock says those donations support a range of programs, including One Book, One Community, the Great Decisions Adult Discussion Series, and seven little free libraries around the country. The county, I should say. Families can also stop by Saturday morning from 10 to noon to visit Pippi the reading dog, who helps children and new readers build confidence. Summit County Library Director Dan Compton says the library will see some big changes next spring when it moves into the former Skull Candy headquarters. The new space will nearly double the library's current footprint.
It's something we've wanted for years is some study rooms and small conference rooms for people. That's the big thing we're lacking is those spaces for people to come and have a nice quiet space to work if they need it.
Because of the move, Compton asks residents to hold off on large book donations until the library reopens in its new location.
If they're only bringing in one book and it's a new, 2025 mm-hmm. book, we'll take it. You know, we can probably add that to the collection. But if you're bringing boxes and boxes, we're going to have enough to do with moving a library that we don't need to be moving more donations as well.
A link to more information on the used book sale can be found online at kbcw.org. In the studio now with a recap from yesterday's Summit County Council meeting, Councilmember Roger Armstrong. Good morning, Roger.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's start with the budget. The budget discussion began with a lengthy discussion of the county and service district budgets, and another meeting scheduled for this Friday. What's going to cover?
This Friday, we're going to talk about the ESST, which is the Emergency Services Sales Tax. And there were a couple of new sales taxes passed during the legislative session. One is the ESST, and the second is what we've imposed yesterday, which is 1.1% impacted communities tax. And it's similar to the tax that Park City has had in place for decades, which allows communities that are substantially impacted by tourism to have some additional funds to take care of the impacts of that visitor experience, which, you know, when you're a county of 45,000 people or 43,000 people or a city of 8,000 people with a big second home community that comes in and out, plus literally 100,000 tourists or more. We have 1 million visitors, I think, that come in, 1.5 million, whatever the number is, that come in and out of this, in and out of the county annually. The impacts are substantial, from landfill to having to have sufficient law enforcement to keep up with the demands, our fire departments to keep up with emergency services. So that was a tax that allowed us to use some of that additional sales tax money for those limited impact purposes. What we're talking about tomorrow is similar. The tax we passed yesterday is for transit and transportation facilities. The sales tax that we're talking about on Friday is emergency services, landfill. There are certain other things that are a little bit broader applications that it can be used for.
So why the decision, though, to go that full 1.1%? Because you didn't have to go that high.
No, we didn't. One, it gets you a better interest rate to have the money. And two, to impose it now, the legislature, as Chris said, the legislature gives, the legislature takes away. If we pass that impacted communities tax now, we've got the Olympics coming up, we've got transportation needs that we know we're going to have to accelerate to get to the finish line of where we want to be by the time that comes. And just generally, the changes that we're making to the transit district at High Valley involving BRT, capture parking, the transit facility that will go in at Kimball Junction. There are a variety of things that we think will not only help short-term in terms of our traffic impacts, but also long-term as we approach the Olympics. If we didn't pass that now, there's always a risk that starting in January, the next legislative session, they decide to repeal it. By passing it and by passing the bond, the approval to go for a bond for $99 million over the course of a that would pay it off over the course of 20 years, it sets up a situation where it's very difficult to cancel that tax.
Yeah, we're already seeing visitation numbers flatten out. So any concerns that we could possibly have outpriced ourselves here? When people kind of look at the bottom line, they're like, well, I could go there for percent less.
Yeah, no, we're still well below the Aspens and the other resorts that we compete with. We're generally at or below most other jurisdictions. We're still below Park City, even with that tax in place. Keep in mind, this only impacts the unincorporated parts of Summit County. It doesn't impact any of the municipalities.
Okay. Both the approval of the bond and the tax passed 4-1, Councilmember Canis Hart voting no, because he said he represents the Snyderville District, which would be the most affected. So are we going to start to see more of this narrow-mindedness from the council going forward?
Boy, I hope not. That certainly is the risk of districting, is that rather than people paying attention to the overall needs of the county, that we start hyper-focusing on the needs of the district that we represent, which makes intuitive sense. If I'm representing you, and only you, I'm going to have a lot of conversations with you and probably weigh your input more strongly than others who don't have the ability to cast a vote. That's the risk of districting. And it's the part of carving Summit County into districts that I never understood. Since I've been on council, when Kim Carson was on council, Chris Robinson is the largest landowner in eastern Summit County. He's in the agricultural business, so when it comes to those kinds of issues, he's somebody that's a natural go-to for those issues. And why you would want to isolate him from those communities doesn't make sense. Kim Carson and I were very, very focused on Eastern Summit County issues, and I think all of the council members that I've served with, none of them have I ever found to be hyper-focused on west side needs versus east side needs. So a lot of the noise that we heard that, you know, people weren't listening to us, I know that even the open space bond that we passed 2 or 3 years ago, the $50 million bond, was we promised that it would be allocated more to the east side than to the west side, and we've lived up to that promise. So it doesn't make sense, and that is a fear that I think we need to be aware of.
Okay. So with the authorization of more $99 million more in bonds, and we've got open space bonds, and where are we in terms of the county's bonding authorization? I mean, how many bonds do we have to pay off?
I don't know the number that we have to pay off, but our credit is still very solid. We make sure, you know, this is a good example. This particular bond that we're issuing, by going to that 1.1%, we have a 2x debt coverage, 2+ times debt coverage on this. They really like that. That lowers the interest rate. If we borrowed less, oddly enough, it would have been at a higher interest rate because we would have had less of that debt coverage. So they like that. We pay our debts. We, you know, pay off bonds and roll over to the next one.
And are you issuing all $99 million at once?
I don't think so, no. We'll just have access to that capital.
But it stays at that lower interest rate?
Yeah.
It won't change when you...
Correct.
Okay.
I think the bond will be issued at that amount, and then we will use it over time as we can.
Okay. Because I think, what is that called? Arbitrage or something? I mean, you have to spend the money you have in your coffers.
We do have to spend the money overall, and we will do that. But again, we're looking at a long-term horizon for these projects. I would hope that we would have, if the Olympics are 2034, we're going to have most of these things in place, I would say by 2030, 32, just to make sure that they work and have a real understanding of how. It's not just the transportation projects. This Olympics is, you went through it the first time. This Olympics is going to require a lot of collaboration among the county, Park City, the state, and the Olympic committees to make sure that we can pull this thing off. And there are going to be a lot of needs that we have to be able to cover. So this is just one piece of that, one straw out of that pile.
Okay. The meeting yesterday was focused on employee salaries. We know 62% of the budget goes for employee salaries and benefits. The council debated the merit increase for elected officials. You noted it's an election year, so why do you need to be careful about those elected salaries?
Well, it's not really being careful about it. What people don't understand is that service on the county council, on the city council, it's a big time commitment. It's a lot. I would say that during the busier times, it's as much as 25 hours a week at least. It's council meetings, sometimes reading very large packets to be prepared for the council meetings so that you can ask the right questions. Multiple committees. I mean, if you look at somebody like Candace Hardy, he's serving on two or three committees for High Valley Transit while he's doing this. I'm on the URC, which is the Renewable Energy Agency, 19 cities and counties that came together to try and work out a deal with the state and Rocky Mountain Power to allow us to purchase renewable energy. Those are 2 hours every week of meetings. It's a lot. And to set a salary that is sufficient for somebody, what I do for a living and my level of compensation for my real job, which I bill on an hourly basis as a lawyer, if I'm doing 25 hours a week for the county, those are 25 hours a week. I'm not billing to clients and doing law jobs. Somebody like me is different from somebody like Megan, who is, you know, was a school teacher, was working for Mountainlands Housing. For people at those broad ends of the economic spectrum, we start filtering out people at the lower economic levels from the ability to come into public service if we don't have enough of a wage for them to make that exchange from their regular job to do this.
So are you advocating for higher council pay?
I think we're advocating, well, it's not just higher council pay. With all of the compensation that we provide in the county, we do a salary survey. We look at what other counties are paying their council members, their commission members. We try to stay competitive, but here I think we're just looking to make sure. When we started this job, when we went from the commission form of government to the county manager form of government, the initial salary was set at about $32,000 or $33,000 a year. It was very, very low because they wanted to try and approximate what the commission was making, and because it was a bit controversial making the change and people were unsure. But it quickly became apparent that for the kind of job that people had to do, that level of salary wasn't going to be enough. And so we've continually tried to make it more and more competitive. And I think it's just a matter of taking a look at it. I wouldn't advocate, you know, doubling it or raising it by 30%, but I think just to make sure that we're thoughtful about it and where we wind up. I don't know where it should be right now. I haven't thought about it.
Okay, moving on, the recorder surveyor, Greg Wolbach, had a request for the council regarding his office's salary. He says the county isn't paying the position what is required under Utah law. What do you think?
I think he's wrong. We are paying what's under Utah law. Utah law, we combined the recorder and the surveyor position, I believe, in 2014. Utah law says that at the time that you combine offices, which you're allowed to do in, I think, a couple of cases, and we chose to do there, it's a little different. Greg was reading it a little bit different. He thought it meant you must pay 1.5 times, you know, you pay 100% of one position, 50% of the other. The law actually says up to 50% of the other, so it can be much lower and up. It's a cap. And I read it to mean, if you're going to combine the two, the state doesn't want positions to be double salaried for the position. So they were providing a cap to say, when you combine, you can go up to this amount. It doesn't say you must go up to that amount. It doesn't say you must go up to any amount. And I think we're complying with the law, and I think he was hoping that it might have a different read, so he took a shot at it. And rightfully so. You know, I think if you took on two jobs, you're going to want to know why you're just getting paid one salary. But as we pointed out, and pursuant to the last discussion you and I had, we set the salary for each elected position every year. And prior to an election year, which we're coming up to now, we want to make sure that we're very clear about what the salaries for every position are so that people can make those decisions. Do I want to run for that office? Can I afford to do that?
Well, and we should note that when Wolbach took the job, there was no surveyor, so the county says that 50% of zero is not, yeah, okay.
Exactly.
So. All right, what does a surveyor do day to day? I mean, does it add that much more to the job?
Yeah, he actually had a list, and people can look in the packet if they're curious, but yeah, he'll look at applications for various things from the planning department. A surveyor surveys. It provides delineations of, you know, what lots are out there, what plats are out there, and those, plus, you know, we've got markers all over the county USGS markers that provide that starting point for calculating, you know, land areas. And, you know, part of the surveyor's job theoretically is making sure those markers are in place. I don't know how well we've done that in the county or as a state overall historically. Every now and then when you're out hiking, you know, you may want to run across one of these things stuck in the ground. It's always fascinating to me.
All right, let's see. Gun Club Road. The proposal is to move the Camas Gun Club Road because of issues with the construction traffic headed to Wasatch County. That decision got put off. How come?
There's still a couple of issues to be worked out. In a nutshell, the residents that live at the bottom of Gun Club Road, which is named after the Lions Gun Club, the shooting range that's out there. It's also 200 South. They were concerned because traffic, I think, coming from Toohey and possibly coming from the Wakara development in Wasatch County, big dump trucks going pretty fast, stirring up a lot of dust, creating safety concerns of the residents as it relates to their children going to and from the bus and just generally being out in the community. They became very concerned. They came to us as a part of that. Wakara is a development in Wasatch County. The only entry and exit that they have right now is 200 South. There was a thought that they would go through Toohey. Toohey said, not going to happen, not in our community. And Wasatch County approved the project without having conversations with us. And we had that meeting with Wasatch County about a year ago. And, you know, just I think we each acknowledge that we probably have to communicate a little bit better with each other when we have those kinds of projects coming up that have cross-county impacts. So we've been having these negotiations with Wasatch and Wakara to try and work out some resolution to get that traffic off of that road and minimize it. We've already put, I think, a 25-mile-an-hour speed limit on 200 South. And ultimately, Wakara has agreed to build a spur off of 200. So coming out of Wakara and Wasatch County and then going up through part of the Ewer property that's on the north side leading up to 248. As a condition proceeding to that agreement taking effect, we have to complete the purchase on the Ewer property because we can't authorize a road going through something that we don't own. That's up to the Ewers. They pay for the road, they being Wakara pays for the road. They pay for annual maintenance on the road. Summit County performs the maintenance on the road and we bill them in advance, I believe, for what we anticipate those costs being.
Okay. So where does that money come from? The HOA, individual property owners?
Initially, it's the developer, and then the developer will set up whatever assessments they need to do within the HOA. And that's the pinch point that we reached yesterday. We want to make sure, as a county, that we're not putting our residents at risk for having to bear the cost of maintenance on this road once it's constructed. So we've required a lien on each of the lots in Wakara so that if there's a default on those payments, we have lien authority and can foreclose on the lots to collect our money. They proposed last night just including it in the CC&Rs as part of the HOA, and that would cover us, and I don't think the majority of us are comfortable with that. So we put a pin in it and said, go back and see if we can resolve this last issue.
Okay. With regard to the Recreation Arts and Parks Recreation Grant, Summit County has dispersed some of the restaurant tax money to other public districts and governments for various projects. The council debated awarding the Fairgrounds and North Summit Recreation some money. The RAP committee didn't recommend funding for the request because they said their applications were missing some information. Could you have just gone with a special exception?
We could have, but you know me, I have an allergy to special exceptions generally, and in this case, to create a precedent where people can come back and say we'd like to be able to cure our application, it didn't work. And I think the Karen, the representative from the committee, she was concerned. Chris had tossed out, you know, how about 45 days to allow North Summit Rec to go back and cure. This was for lightings for their new athletic fields. Light poles. And she said she didn't think that they would be able to get all the issues together in time to do that in 45 days. And frankly, by the time they did get it together, we're probably pretty close to the next application period anyway.
Okay. You did, however, approve a special exception for McDonald's. Why was that? Okay.
Yeah, horrors. Well, it's for their menu boards. And they're still using the old style menu boards where you slide in a new card for each price. And at this point, it's becoming tougher and tougher to get the materials to repair those boards. It's very old technology. Everybody's going to something digital now. And they said, we just can't afford to do it anymore. It's located in a place right now where the impacts, you can't see it from 224. It's up there tucked away by that car wash, and it seems to be low risk. It's not a residential neighborhood. We have lighting restrictions on it. The signs are dimmable. They only operate at certain hours. This one seemed like low impact, and we asked the Planning Commission to go back and take on this issue about digital boards so that we don't just have the wild, wild west out there with people wanting to put up all kinds of boards.
Yeah, because it sounds like there's another business out there that wants to do the same. Do we know who that is?
Well, we had a comment from, I think, the owner of Del Taco, who thought it was a good idea. I have no idea if he's facing the same issue, but he did confirm that apparently the McDonald's board at this point is being held together with duct tape, so it's that bad.
Okay, well, you can show everybody how old you are. I could join you.
Yeah,
by listing all of the ingredients on a Big Mac.
To all be patty, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions on a sesame seed bun.
How's you got that? It. All right. Roger, anything else?
That's it. Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
That's Summit County Council Member Roger Armstrong. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, Revolution Ski and Blade is a local ski and rollerblade team, and on the phone with more details about the team and how to get involved, I have the founder and head coach, Jason Stinsman. Good morning, Jason.
Hey, good morning to you. Thank you so much for having me on today.
Sure. So tell us a little bit about the Revolution Ski and Blade team.
So we are a free ski, park, pipe, big air, and rail jam team. We compete on all the levels of all the different contests, from local USASA comps to national level rev tours, and we even have athletes all the way up and competing on the World Cup level.
Great.
And so, yeah, we're a local team, and we just want to get our name out there a little more and get everyone to, you know, get behind the Revolution.
Yeah. Now, are you guys a nonprofit organization?
Yeah, we're a nonprofit 501c organization. We just had a pretty successful time in the Live PC, Give PC donations that just happened a week ago. And we just wanted to thank the whole Park City community for coming out and supporting us in that.
Okay. So how many athletes are on the team? And they range in age from what to what?
Yeah, so we have about 35 athletes on the team right now. We're actually one of the smaller teams in the area. And our youngest athlete, I believe, is around 6 years old, and our oldest athlete is currently 21. And, we try to focus on a little bit more of the competition aspect of the sport now that, you know, free skiing has been accepted into the Olympics, you know, and especially with the 2034 Olympics coming up. We're really focused on getting our athletes into the development and into the best programs they can be in to, be really successful in the competition side of the sport.
Yeah, so it's only free ski as opposed to free ride. You don't train snowboarders. Is that right?
No. So we're pretty specific. We only do skiing, and we only do the four events of free skiing. So we do half pipe, slopestyle, big air, and rail jam. And so that's what we specialize in. We don't snowboard. We don't alpine race. We don't Nordic jump. We just do those sports, and we try to do them the best we can.
So what do you think you offer that other local free ski teams may not be?
So I would say the main thing that separates us is that my background is that I was a professional rollerblader in the X Games, you know, back when that was a thing in the late 90s and the early 2000s. And so what really separates our team is that I feel that summer cross training and aggressive inline skating and rollerblading is the best possible cross training you can do for park, pipe, and big air skiing, because basically we're using all of the same ramps. You know, maybe they're on a smaller scale, but we're using all the same ramps, the quarter pipes, the jumps, the rails, the grind. And so I really feel that what helps our team get ahead is that everybody uses the skates. We skate all summer long. We're learning all the tricks on skis on the skates. And I feel like because of that, there's not many other teams, because there's not many other rollerbladers left anymore. But there's not many teams out here who are really specializing in that too, and you know, really using that to cross train and produce better free skiers.
Yeah, what were some of the events as a professional rollerblader? I just guess I don't miss that.
No, I got you. So, I mean, rollerblading was really big back in the late 90s and the early 2000s. I was in the 01 and 02 X Games in Philadelphia. I also have the Guinness World Record for the first ever double backflip on rollerblades. And so that was a huge part of my life. And then rollerblading really fell off in like the late 2000s into even to now. And I feel like there's very few of us left who really saw the link between free skiing and rollerblading. Like I saw it obviously, like everybody skateboards. But really, if you want to be a free skier, the rollerblading is almost an exact copy of the sport just on dry land. And I feel like I was able to see that because, you know, that was the background that I had. And I just feel like it does. It really produces a better skier. You know, everything's a little more precise on the skates. Everything's a little more defined. And, you know, the balance is a little harder. And so if you can master the tricks on the skates, and plus it's cement. So falling on cement, like, hurts a lot more than snow. So if you can master the tricks on the blades, it's good to go on the snow.
Yeah. So where do you train both summer and winter?
So, you know, we have a full year program. We take, some small breaks in the fall and the spring. But all summer long, we want to thank Park City Woodward for always supporting us. That, I would say, is our main training facility in the winter and in the summer. We also use the public Park City Skate Park. It's a good time. We'll have all the kids there and, you know, have a session. And, you know, wherever we can rollerblade, we do it. And so we also use the UOP for the airbag in the summer. We want to thank them. And, really the whole Park City community has supported us. And I just wanted to come on the show and get our name out there and, tell us a little more about how we do the cross training and blading, because I do think that separates.
All right. So you do ski out of Park City Mountain then, or is it all at Woodward?
It's mainly all at Woodward. We ski out of PCMR a little bit. We train there occasionally. But in general, I would say Woodward is our main training facility.
Okay. And then where do these competitions happen? I mean, all over?
Oh, well, let's see. The whole team is headed to Austria on Tuesday to train in the Prime Park at the Stubby Zoo. There's also a World Cup and a rail jam that we'll be interested in competing in. And then also... we travel the whole world. We just got back from Chile. We had a really successful event down in Valle Navarro in South America. We took, podiums in all the events there. And, again, we're focused on competition. We're really trying to get our athletes ahead. So we do what we have to do. We travel where we need to go. After Austria, we'll be headed into the whole U.S. season, which is a lot of contests. You know, we compete in all levels. So that'll be our, the U.S. season will come through. And then after that, coming into, the summertime, we'll look to go to South America again and New Zealand. So we're really an international team. Even though we're a nonprofit, we do not have a ton of funding. We try to give back to the kids as much as we can. We try to make the trips as least expensive as we can for them, because we know that skiing is a very expensive sport, and what we're trying to do out here is not cheap. And, we just want to give back to the kids as much as possible. If I can say one thing, we are currently looking for a rail setup for dry land training. Rail jam is going to be an upcoming sport. It's going to be competed on the FIS national level this year coming up. There'll be two World Cup rail jams starting next year. I'm sure they're looking to put rail jam into the Olympics. And so we are looking for a dry land summertime rail training facility. Basically, we just need a place to be able to build our dry land rail setup so we can ski down it in the summertime and practice grounding rails, because there really isn't one available in Park City right now. And as an upcoming sport, we would, it's going to be a big event. It's definitely moving towards the Olympics, and we want to be able to train it with our kids. And so if anyone has any links to a place we could do it, a donation that you would give us for it, we can build the setup and everything. We just really need a location to make it happen. We've been doing it at athletes' houses for the last few years, but that just having to switch the setup all the time, it just is hard. Okay. And so if anyone out there has any, you know, information about a place that we could set this up, it's not really a permanent setup. We could probably move it here and there, but we would love to be able to train this because it's an upcoming sport and there isn't a facility in Park City to do it.
Okay, so how do people reach you?
Yeah, please reach out to us at revolutionskiandblade.org. You can text me personally at 484-951-9559, or you can specially reach out to us at revolutionskiandblade@gmail.com.
Okay. So, yeah, I've kind of been there, done that with a kid on the ski team. It is very expensive. How do you support your athletes? I mean, do you offer scholarships or?
Yeah, you know, we do offer some scholarships. We only have 35 athletes. We're actually on a waiting list right now. We don't take too many athletes. We really try to have a very personal experience with all the families and all the athletes on our team. So if you're having, we're very flexible with our payment options and structures and whatnot. We will work with you personally to make it happen. A lot of different families are in a lot of different financial situations. And we do give scholarships to athletes kind of on a special basis here and there. But we work with our parents as much as we can on the financial side to make it as cheap as possible. All of our donations this year are going to go to our rail setup. You know, any of the donations from the previous years have always gone to like athlete travel budgets, just making in general, some of the most expensive stuff is when you become an older athlete, you have to start going on these trips to go to these international contests, it becomes very expensive. And so for those athletes, we try to give them sponsorships. We try to, you know, reach out to different people to help them out. And so I feel like we do as much as we can for our athletes, you know, and I wish I could get them personally, like I wish I could call sponsors and just get them sponsored, but, you know, we do as much as we can and I give back personally as much as I can. You know, I've barely taken a salary in the last 5 years because I want the team to be successful and I don't, you know, I'm not in it for the money. I'm out here. I'm in it for the athletes. And frankly, I'm out here and I'm in it to win. And so that's what it's about.
Okay, Jason, I need to leave it there. Thanks for your time this morning.
Hey, thank you so much. Thank you. Bye-bye.
It's Jason Stinsman, again, the head coach with the Revolution Ski and Blade team. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. PC Tots will have some openings in the studio to tell us more about that. It's the executive director, Sue Banerjee. Good morning, Sue.
Good morning, Leslie.
Maybe just start by giving us a little background on PC Tots, who you are and what you do.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for having me this morning. And good morning, Park City. PC Tots, we are a nonprofit child care provider. We have been in existence since 2015, founded by some amazing community members who got together and saw a real need in this community for affordable, high-quality care. And so we currently have 3 centers that serve children 8 weeks up to 5 years old. We run from 7:30 in the morning to 5:30 p.m. Monday through Friday all year long so that parents who are working can have stable, accessible child care.
Okay, so you don't close during the Christmas and winter break holidays?
Well, so that's the one time we do take that week off. We found that families really were traveling, doing all sorts of fun stuff. We wanted to kind of align with their needs. But otherwise, we are pretty much open. We only take, you know, a few holidays. My teachers are incredible, and they are there with those kiddos every day, Monday through Friday.
So how many kids total can you take?
We can take around 100, 120 children, depending on the child age we're serving. Yeah, we have ratios. So the younger the kid, the smaller the classroom.
Right. What about those infant openings? Are they, they're probably the hardest to come by, yeah?
They are the hardest to come by. We do anticipate having some infant openings. This is, to some extent, a population that some of the families we serve are here for temporary basis, or they move out to a different area in Utah. And so we do see some openings come up. So I would suggest anyone who has a child and needs a space, get on our wait list at pctots.org. We don't charge anything to get on our wait list.
Okay. I mean, how soon does somebody need to put their name on that list? I mean, once they announce they're pregnant?
You know, we have seen people do that. It's funny. We've had stories where moms have told me, I got on your wait list before I told my husband. I don't think that's necessary, but, you know, the sooner the better.
Yeah. So how many openings will you have?
We're looking at that right now. We expect to have a couple openings in infants. We definitely have some pre-K openings, and I think we're going to have at least one or two openings potentially in the 2 to 3 year old range.
Okay. So again, that's the best thing to do is get on that waiting list.
Yes, ma'am.
I know PC Tots committed not only to keeping your rates low, and that's basically it's market rate and then lots of subsidies.
That's right.
But you also want to pay your employees a living wage. So how are you making up that difference?
We make up that difference through fundraising. We provide tuition scholarships. We call it our Brighter Tomorrow Scholarship, and that is fundraised. So every family pays something, but it is in accordance with where they are on the our Summit County area median income. So a family that's at 50% of area median income, they're going to pay less than a family that's at 120% area median income, but everybody pays something. And the rest, to close that gap, we fundraise for.
Yeah. Now, both Park City and Summit County have helped with scholarship funding. And what is that? What have they made available?
So Park City and Summit County, Park City Municipal and Summit County government have put together a public funding of childcare that is run through a third party called Upwards. And so what they do, their program is incredible, and it aligns so well with what our community needs are. So the idea is that if you are a family below 100% AMI, they're going to be able to avail themselves of this program and get some dollars to help with their childcare costs. And so it really is directed towards families that are working in this community or reside in this community and are finding, given these uncertain economic times, difficult to make ends meet.
Yeah. Now, I know Park City Municipal added some to their contribution to kind of extend it to, I guess, the end of the year.
Yeah.
Because they work their fiscal years on, you know, summer to summer.
Yeah.
Summit County, however, is a calendar year.
Yes.
Have you had a look at that budget, and is that child care money in next year's budget?
Well, so this is interesting. We are we're watching what's going to happen with Summit County Council, because, you know, so many of our families, and not just PC Tots families, these are families all over the county that are using child care to be able to work here in Park City and Summit County. And so we've been talking to council members. We're positive, we're hopeful that there's going to be money in the budget. But what we have found with Park City and with Summit County is that without some sort of stable funding source, we're having to go back and have these conversations year after year, budget cycle after budget cycle. Families are, you know, sharing their stories regularly now. And it becomes a lot for families emotionally, and just, you know, with their busy schedules, they're working so hard. And so I feel very positive that there's going to be something in the budget. Of course, I would encourage anyone who cares about this issue to reach out to your council members to share your thoughts on this, especially if it's in support. But I do think that that's sort of a larger systemic issue that needs to be kind of addressed. How do we keep this stable? Especially because we've gotten such great national recognition. We're pioneers. Utah's full of pioneers, and Park City is too. And we are really setting the standard as to what communities can do to support their working families with this issue.
Yeah. So with the financials, those need to be updated every year from the families then?
Mm-hmm. They do.
Yeah. Were you at all impacted by the government shutdown?
Some of our families were, 100%. We have families that are, they receive SNAP benefits. And so without those funds coming into them, you know, we were directing them to food pantries and other sources of, you know, groceries for them. But then, you know, they have to make tough financial decisions. We luckily, you know, were able to keep those kids in childcare. But some of those parents were coming to us and saying, we love your program. We love what you've done for our child. But we may need to put pause on this because we're in a monetary crunch. Our household budget is suffering because we don't have SNAP benefits coming in. And so we're thinking we may push pause. Luckily, that hasn't happened. We've been able to, you know, work things through. But that's, you know, always top of mind.
Yeah, or any employee or any parents that are federal employees that weren't getting a paycheck.
Yeah, exactly.
Just needed a break.
Yeah, yeah. Luckily, no child had to leave our care, but those were hard conversations to have.
Okay. Well, it sounds like things are going to get better, at least for the short term here.
Fingers crossed. I hope so.
Okay. And you also had your pre-K students show some respect for our veterans.
Absolutely. We're so grateful for the service of our veterans. I have lots of family members who are veterans, and I think it's really fun and stimulating for our children to have people come in and talk about, you know, their experiences. So we had Mayor Nan Worrell come in to our library pre-K classroom and read a book to our children and answer their questions about what it's like to be a veteran and what it's like to be the mayor of Park City. And our kiddos were amazing and very respectful to our guest. And she was obviously fantastic, read a great book about military parents. So our children could relate to, oh, this is my family. And, you know, other families may have a mom or dad that gets deployed. What does that mean? What does it mean for my mom to fly a helicopter? So it was really, really something that they could kind of relate to with their own lives.
Okay. Sue, anything else you wanted to mention?
Well, thank you so much. And I want to just say thank you to Park City and Summit County and our amazing supporters. You guys really supported us during Live Give, and we're just so grateful and honored. I tell people I have the best job in the world because I get to talk to our families and our kiddos. So thank you, Park City and Summit County.
Okay. And again, if you're interested in one of the handful of openings that you'll have, pctots.org.
Correct.
Sue, thank you.
Thank you.
Sue Banerjee is the executive director of PC Tots. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW.